Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Nintendo Heartcast, the best Nintendo podcast for intelligent and in-depth discussions about the Japanese company. We heart Nintendo, but that doesn't mean we can't constructively criticize the latest happenings and events with the developer and hardware maker. I'm your host, Evan Campbell, and the toad to my Mario is my co-host, Noah Ward.
Hi there, everybody.
This week on the Heartcast, we have a lot to discuss, especially Noah finally got his mitts on his Flame Red 3DS and has been playing a little bit of everything. We also are definitely going to look at the Miyamoto story on whether he's retiring, stepping down, or staying in his current position. And then there's also a bunch of Nintendo news and a little bit of listener feedback that we'll be delving into in multiplayer mode, and then we'll wrap the show up for you. Noah, are you excited?
I am excited, Evan Campbell.
I'm glad to hear the feedback, Noah Ward. So, let's get started into player input. For this episode on player input, we're going to focus mainly on Noah and his 3DS. Last episode, you know, he was still waiting to get his handheld system, but this week he's had it and got to put a lot of time in with it. So, Noah, what have you been playing with mainly?
My first two games for the system, official retail games, are Pac-Man and Galaga Dimensions and Super Mario 3D Land. So I've put in a little bit of time into the Pac-Man and Galaga game, which I was really excited about, particularly because I loved Pac-Man Champion Edition and Galaga Legion. Or is it Legions? I can't remember exactly. On the Xbox Live Arcade game library. And I just was really excited to see those psychedelic nightclub style visuals that those games have in 3D. And it was pretty cool, but those games inherently are pretty simplistic. So I was looking for something that would push the horsepower a little bit more and that I knew would be guaranteed quality. And so I decided to get Super Mario 3D Land as my official 3DS first in start to finish game.
Definitely. And I've also played and beat the game, I guess you could say. I was telling Noah in the show warm up about how I've beat the regular 8 worlds and then, spoilers, the 8 special worlds and collect all the coins, and now I can go back through with Luigi. So I have very positive impressions about the game and final thoughts. What's your takeaway so far, and how far have you proceeded in the game?
Listeners, if you've been listening to me on podcasts in the past across the various shows that I've been doing, you may remember that I had a very nasty experience with Super Mario 3D Land and its demo at PAX in Seattle back in August. And once I got to that level again, which surprise, surprise, it was level 1-2 of the game, I'm like, this level sucks and it is not a good example for the rest of this game. What I think is kind of, there's a few things that I want to say about the game. First of all, I really do like it. It is great. It's not going to be my favorite Mario game of all time, but would I rank it above New Super Mario Brothers? I think I would.
The DS just or a little Wii bit. Version?
The DS version. Well, okay. And the Wii version. I don't really.
Not really discriminate between both. They're all one big thing.
Yeah, exactly. And this game definitely does not compare to Galaxy in my mind, even though it is by the same people. But what I can say is, to their credit, is that under the direction to make a transitional game, kind of a 3D Mario game for 3D beginners, and being required to make levels that are short, that the Tokyo development team has done a really great job, because it's when you hear about doing a job, or like think about writing a story, like if you have to write a short story versus a novel, you still need to be just as skillful at writing a good short story as you would in a novel. What I'm trying to get at is that while the levels in Mario 3D Land, they're not consistently amazing, like Galaxy 1 and 2's levels were, where it's like every level is just like, wow, there's something really memorable or really neat about this. You can see just how skillful the developers of the game are, because it takes some real chops to make decent short levels that still feel satisfying. And every once in a while, there is a level that just really impressed me, whether it was one that was all based around the original Mario 2D pixel art, which was so cool. I really like that. There was another one that was, it was a temple. It was kind of like a maze temple, as I recall, that was all top down, which was really weird. It was really weird to play a Mario game that way. It was kind of like the original Zelda.
Oh, was that the really Zelda cool. tribute level? Was that 5-2?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, yeah, that's the Zelda tribute level.
He says with a wheeze. Also, there's a clock tower level that's not too long after that that I thought was really cool. And there's also some other levels with just timing blocks that are synchronized with the soundtrack platforms that appear and disappear, like kind of like a typewriter or clock ticking. That's really cool. And then this concept of platforms, it's like a red and blue platform, and only one side is visible at any time. And no matter where you jump in that level, the platform flips from blue to red. So where there was a blue platform, there's now a hole. And where there was a hole, there's a red platform, and they flip back and forth. Man, the first time I got into that first level that used that, it just kicked my butt. I'm like, this is really freaking challenging and annoying, because it's such a simple concept, but it makes you really take into account, like, I can't jump. I need to have the platform set up just so before I start jumping, and then I have to dodge fireballs and turtles and all this other stuff, jumping out of boxes and like, ah! But just really cool stuff. And I remember when Evan was telling me that the worlds weren't themed, at first I'm like, oh, come on, I don't know if I really like that, because I'm so used to, since this game takes so much from the whole side-scrolling Marios of yore, I'm really used to, all right, World 1 is grass world, World 2 is swamp world, World 3 is ice world, World 4 is desert world, so on and so forth. But now that I've gone through, I'm actually at the end of the game. The end of the first game, so to speak. I'm on the very last level of that. Mm-hmm. I can say I really enjoyed everything not being thematic, because as a longtime Mario gamer, I usually dread water levels and water worlds. I'm just like, oh, this is going to suck. And I don't like ice levels either. And when they're all mixed up and moved apart, it does make for some really boring and lame looking stage maps, which definitely Mario 3D Land has its share of, very mm-hmm. minimalistic to a fault. But it's really refreshing from an overall gameplay perspective. Like, oh, cool, I'm not going to be stuck going from one pyramid to the next, or one volcano to the next, or one ice level to the next. It's going to constantly be fresh and something interesting, and I really liked how they did that. And I love the short levels. Yeah, they're not as whimsical or incredibly creative, but they're still fun, and they have a nice sense of accomplishment.
Yeah, and I wanted to bring that up. There's two things about you liking the short levels, and it sounds like you definitely have gotten through the game rather quickly to be at World 8. Not that, like you said, the levels are short. You brought up the merging of 2D and 3D, which I also believe it does well. Do you think, in regards to difficulty, because you're obviously a Mario veteran, how does that stack up? Did you feel like it was too easy, it was too difficult in spots, or was it just really paced and finely tuned? And then I guess my next question would be, are you looking to keep playing more to play the next 8 special worlds? Has it pushed you that far? Or is it you've gotten enough and you enjoyed this experience while it lasts?
Okay, so as far as the platforming goes, I think the only times it gets really challenging is when the developers go out of their way to exaggerate the height of things so that you have, or it's a really deep level where the camera's set kind of low down and it's like it's a deep horizon jump, so you're jumping far into the picture, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Whenever that happens, or if you're dropping like 5,000 feet or having to navigate stuff that's just a little bit longer than a normal fall, that it gets a little bit unnecessarily difficult, but I appreciate the challenge. I think if I were a new gamer, I'd get kind of frustrated with it, 3D or not. As far as playing through the game, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to the advanced set of levels, so to speak, because I want to see if I can tolerate it. Because I've really enjoyed kind of being on cruise control at this point. Yeah. There's been the flipping red and blue platforms. The first time I got that, I died a lot in that. And then it was the Bowser castle at the end of World 5 that just frustrated the heck out of me, and I had to start over and over and over, and I was so mad at that level. It was just really, really frustrating. But other than that, I've really enjoyed it being easy. And what happened when Mario versus Donkey Kong March of the Minis, I think, whatever the last one was on DS, it does something similar to that. And I feel like I went through more gameplay in that game than I have in the first half of Mario 3D Land. But when it's like, all right, again, except with all these difficult constraints, I'm like, forget that, no. Right now, I'm looking forward to it. I'm just not sure how things are going to be mixed up, but I did read in some reviews that these levels really show off the 3DS's capabilities and are even more akin to Galaxy levels in some cases. So from that perspective, I'm going to try to power through it, even if it seems ridiculously difficult. Although I don't think it'll be as much of a difficulty jump as it is in Mario versus Donkey Kong.
No, it definitely paces well. Obviously, the pacing's fantastic. Even when it's like sort of easy early on in the first three or four worlds, I was still like, I felt like there's still enough challenge there for me. Like, by no means was I like dying too much, or I possibly didn't even die at all. I'm not sure. But like, I still was enjoying myself. And the pacing in the special worlds, I heard, like, you may have read or heard that like it's a huge jump in difficulty. And I think it keeps going along that path, along that train track, just keeps smooth ride where you just keep bumping up a little bit. And then when you get to the eighth world of the special world, it really goes, it really escalates there, but still not to like, I never felt there was a spike, in the level of difficulty. And it's, I feel like that's one of Nintendo's just expertises in game design. They just know how to fine tune that to such a great degree. It's rather remarkable. But yeah, I think you'll like the eighth world. There are some weird, you were talking about like constraints that can be difficult. One of the things you'll find in the special worlds is a lot of the Shadow Marios going after you. And not only will you have Shadow Mario in some of the worlds, but then you'll have a 30-second timer and you have to pick up new timers to lengthen the time clock so you can finish the level before it runs out.
So we'll see how I feel about that.
Yeah, and you're not the only one who's enjoyed Mario 3D Land. Zeroid commented that he was glad to hear that I love 3D Land, and obviously, Noah, you did too. He went on to say it's a great little game. It may not be the lengthiest Mario title, but almost every level is packed with loads of gaming goodness, and this is especially true in the special worlds. He said, like you know, and you commented earlier, there were quite a few people who were a little bit down on the game after checking out the early demo, but I've been observing the Twitterverse since the game's release, and it's been amazing to me just how many of these people have completely changed their tune. It really seems to grow on you as you play through. And I would think that you are definitely one of those people that changed their tune after finally playing the game, Noah.
It's a lot better than I expected. One thing that I do think is kind of weird for it, in terms of, especially since it's supposed to be a bridge game between 2D and 3D Marios, for those Japanese gamers out there who apparently hate 3D Marios and prefer their side-scrolling Marios, I felt like there was far less in the way of tutorials, in terms of, I didn't know that I could do a ground pound until I figured it out for myself. And wall jumps aren't really ever explained or moved into. It's just like there's opportunities to do them. But basically, the game makes a lot of assumptions that you've played a lot of other Mario games before and know the basic moves and don't bother to really ease you into it, which kind of surprised me because I feel like most Mario games don't do that. They are treated as kind of, this is the gateway Nintendo game, period. There's always an assumption that it's like the first Nintendo game you're ever playing or the first Mario game you're ever playing. And they're going to ease you into gameplay concepts. Whereas this one, It's, I don't know if it's because the level designs are all mixed up. There's a sky level, there's a water level, there's a desert level, but it's just like, there's some stuff that it just takes for granted, which really surprised me. It seemed, I'm not sure how to feel about it. I'm so used to a little bit more in the way of tutorials and saying, oh yeah, by the way, you can crouch if you do this, or you can crouch slide if you do this. And it's like, it's just not there at all. It's just like, here you go, figure it out. This game's so simple. You should be able to figure it out on your own. And that just kind of rubbed me the wrong way a little bit.
I obviously have a lot of experience, so maybe I'm not looking at it from the newcomer viewpoint. That never bothered me too much. I just kind of played around with the shoulder buttons. And I mean, I guess it really harkens back to the original Super Mario Brothers without any tutorial. I think one reason it doesn't have tutorials to some extent is there's such a clear-cut path in the levels. Like, even though they're not all side-scrolling, it's always you're going one way. It's like you're going farther into the screen, you're going left to right. There's never like a too many split paths or anything like that. And I don't remember, like, I know I did do wall jumping and crouching, Noah, but I don't remember, and you're playing the early level, so it's been a couple weeks for me. I don't remember ever necessarily needing those maneuvers.
Yeah, you definitely need it to get some of the star coins.
Okay.
I mean, it's blatantly obvious. Like, there's one in the level that I just played where there's a star coin stuck between two walls that are in lava. So the only way you can get it is by wall jumping in and out to get to it.
But that's what I mean. Like, you don't need it necessarily to beat the level, but to get these extra star coins.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think seeing that, though, is a good enough visual clue to make people kind of explore that and say, hey, can I keep jumping along the wall? Or
perhaps, especially since they give you the invincible Tanuki suit or whatever if you die five times in the level. But I don't know. I don't want the tutorials. Don't get me wrong. I'm not like, I don't want the hand holding because I don't need it and I can figure it out on my own. But thinking of a perspective of a kid gamer, I think it'd be kind of like, well, welcome to the 80s. Maybe that's really, I'm just so used to modern game design that really hand holds you and explains everything, every button press one way or the other throughout the game. Whereas back in the 80s, it wasn't like that. It was like, read the manual. Or just suck it up, figure it out on your own. So maybe it is a good thing. Now that I look at it from that perspective, it's going to make our kids tougher.
It's intriguing because I didn't even notice that, but you're completely right. Like, if you play Super Mario Galaxy 2, it starts out as a side-scrolling game from a 2D perspective, and it kind of gives you these little tutorials. But in Super Mario 3D Land, it starts. I don't even think there's anything that shows you what button jumps or anything else. Like you said, you just go.
Yeah.
So.
Or even running. That's not spelled out. It's one of the two buttons.
Yep. So I think it's a very, in regard to how they're trying to make it the gap between Super Mario World and the 3D Marios, mixing it in and that they decided to go that route. I'm sure that was probably the main discussion topic of a lot of debates between the developers and Nintendo and whether it should be placed there or not. So it is a very interesting fact. And then I guess one thing to sum it up, are you someone who has to collect all three special coins in each level or not?
I will replay a level if I saw one and I missed it for some reason, like there's a freaking moving platform and I missed my chance.
Mm-hmm.
If it's one that I'm like, wow, I don't know where that is, unless I really enjoyed playing the level, I won't go back and get them. I've gotten most of the star coins. I mean, I have to quantitatively place my progress. I think I'm at 100 star coins. No, 112 star coins, and I have 100 lives, which is something I love. I'm so glad that it just saves how many lives you have. And doesn't do the Mario Galaxy thing where it's like, oh, you turned your console off. Guess what? You're back to three lives. It's really nice that it remembers something about your progress. But I think I will go back if there's a substantial enough incentive for it. But if it's something like unlock Luigi or something like that, no, I don't care enough. I have a feeling once I finish the game, I will
suck
be done.
That, Luigi. That's funny. Well, you also played quite a few more games. I'm guessing Mario 3D Land got most of your attention, but what else has been in your 3DS rotation?
I have gone through all of the gimmicks, and I'm quite happy with them. I really am glad that I waited at least until now to get my 3DS, because I know that had I gotten all giddy about the gimmicks, that not having any games to play after that, I'd be like, this system sucks. But when paired with a really great game like Mario 3D Land, it's really cool to know that I'm going to be able to show off to my parents when I go see them for Christmas, or my friends. Like, I've had some gamer friends over. I'm like, check this out. And then I'm like, can I wait until next week? And then I'm going to show them this other feature. So stuff like the AR games, the 3D camera, face raiders, and of course, checking out the new eShop interface and Mii Maker. I've spent a decent amount of time actually in all of them. I was really excited about the AR game. Something that irritated me about them is that you are required to do the question mark block card first. And I was trying to do one of the other cards first, and I'm like, what is wrong with this? I put the Pikmin card in my kitchen. I put it in the bathroom. I put it in the office. I put it directly
in the
shower light. I shined a flashlight. I'm like, it's like, cannot recognize card. Cannot recognize card. I'm like, what is wrong? What the hell does the system need to recognize the card? Oh, the system needs you to look at these cards in a certain order before they will acknowledge. I'm like, that's BS. But once it did, wow, really, really cool being able to transform the surface of your table or your counter or whatever it is that you put it on and play little games with it. Really, really fun. And I had no problem doing it in 3D. And I loved showing it to my friends. It's really cool. And the 3D camera, I also thought was really impressive. One of the things that I wasn't expecting is that you can take pictures, but you can adjust the intensity of the 3D much further than the actual hardware slider on the 3DS itself allows. Now, of course, the hardware slider is for personally turning the 3D on or off on the top screen and adjusting it to its whatever strength. But what I'm talking about is you can set the 3D at max level on the hardware, but then after you've taken a 3D photo, you can make the perspective even deeper than you would see in a game or in a video. And so I had a really fun, kind of trippy time just like making the perspective really intense. And what's funny is it makes you do the same thing that you might have done if you've ever seen those old stereogram pictures where you have to cross your eyes, which for me was always really hard to do. It's like, okay, get really close to the picture and put your index finger on in front of you and move further back and stare at your index finger. And it's like, for some reason, I can physically feel that I'm doing that same cross-eye thing with these super max 3D photos, but it's really easy. I don't have to do the finger trick or anything. It's just like it happens really painlessly and seamlessly, and it makes a really cool image, and I can make it as intense as I want, which is really fun. Mm-hmm. As far as face raiders, that also is really cool.
I wasn't quite sure
how well it would be or how good it would be at mapping fake expressions onto your face, but it does a really good job. It's very funny, and I'm glad that I gave it a try. It's something that I tried casually a week later. I'm like, oh, I might as well see what this is like. I don't want to take a picture of myself, but all right, let's do this.
It's
very cool.
It's funny hearing you talk about all these because it makes me realize how much was just packed in the system for free. And a lot of people complain about it at the time because, like you said, there weren't too many games, so people play that up. But there's a few hours worth of content packed in the system that's free. And then there's something like the Mii Plaza that's like especially with the new update, which we'll talk about soon. Just it's like a constant game that you can just keep going back to.
That's something I've yet to try. That's still one thing I haven't tried is the whole Mii Plaza and those games related to that.
Yeah, and I've played those a lot. I've gotten more street passes recently, and it's probably because of more people buying up the system for the holidays. But you can also use, if you walk with the system, you obviously get coins through the pedometer, and you can use those to buy like adventures and Find Mii or to buy picture pieces for the 3D pictures. So that's something you can do if you don't find yourself getting street passes, Noah. But I'm curious after what happened with the 3DS and this rough start, and it really seemed like people didn't necessarily appreciate it, if Nintendo goes back to more of a bare-bones system and spends those developmental resources elsewhere. Because it didn't seem, you're talking about it, and maybe here in the long haul it will, because it sounds like that you're waiting to show people these cool little features. And I think that was definitely Nintendo's intention at first, but it didn't really pan out.
Yeah.
So I wonder, I'm just curious how it's affecting the what will come packed in with Wii U. Whether if they had like a bunch of mini games packed in with a system, or if they're instead thinking, you know, maybe we should go like the Wii Sports Resort instead of having just various different ideas that are fun, having one that's just a knockout that gets people talking.
Well, it's the whole concept of getting a full retail game versus a bunch of demos, even though some people might have referred to Wii Sports as a collection of demos, that its presentation as a disc.
And definitely.
Made it seem like you were getting a lot more. It's like, wow, it's coming with a free game, which is really just tech demos in disguise, but it's still a game.
Yeah. And then you mentioned it, but we haven't gone into it, the Nintendo eShop. This was your first time with that. And you basically have gotten to experience the best and latest eShop. When I bought my system in March, there wasn't even an eShop with the system.
Oh,
if you
right,
can imagine.
Yeah.
And it's funny how quickly we forget things like that. But before you get into that, with the new 3DS system update, there were some cool new features for people that have had the system since the beginning. Now when you buy a game, you can add exact funds. Noah, before this, you had to add money in quantities of like $5, $10, $20, $50. So even if you
want Nintendo.
Even if you wanted to buy like a, I think that's true with Xbox Live. I don't think you can buy stuff in exact funds, which is ridiculous. Nintendo has now added that option. And not only that, you can save your credit card info with the system.
Oh, thank goodness. I am so sick of entering that in.
Yep. There's also, and I'll call it magic downloading. You can now queue up to 10 games to download. And then you can choose to download them later. And basically, so you can just queue up your 10 downloads, close the system, walk away, make yourself a sandwich, come back, and those games will magically be on your system. Download codes are part of it now. So I think it's not shown anywhere on the main menu, but if you go into settings, there's now the option to put in a download code, which will be familiar to anyone that has a PlayStation Network or Xbox Live account. And this will just be good because now developers can definitely push out games and promotional things, especially across Twitter. So those are some of the new features. But for someone that who's experienced the WiiWare and Virtual Console Shop on Nintendo, what did you think about the eShop coming in, Noah? And you're a big Xbox guy, and you really love that interface. So I'm really curious of what your thoughts are.
Definitely think that it's an improvement over the Wii Shop.
Oh yeah, it's
I don't know.
It's like a glorified website, a really poorly run website on the Wii.
Yeah, and I did have some frustration with it that seemed more related to the hardware, where I'd be like, all right, because I like to lay in my bed to play video games a lot because it's just very comfortable and relaxing. And my bedroom is not immediately next to my wireless router. And I consistently have issues with my 3DS establishing and maintaining connection with the internet connection somewhere. And what sucks is you can't cancel out of it. So it's like, all right, start up the store. And it will sit there for like 2 or 3 minutes trying to resolve your internet connection before it says, can't make a connection. It's like, come on, unless I force it to turn off by holding on the power button. For some reason, its Bluetooth or whatever it is to connect to Wi-Fi is really weak because I have no issues with any of my other wireless devices connecting to my wireless router for my bedroom, whether it's my laptop or, well, any variety of laptops. I've actually used several, or even my old DS. But with my 3DS, it always has issues. I have to be close with or within line of sight, so to speak, even though it's under a desk right now, of the router for it to work well. That aside, the eShop interface is definitely nice. I'm glad to know that there's sleep mode downloads. That's really cool. I still really want background downloads like XBLA has and PSN has, because I'm turning on my system usually when I have time to use it. I usually don't think like, oh, I should turn on my system because I want to do that download and I'm not actually going to use my system, but you know, I'll be around to check it out 10 minutes later. So it's still either that or you have to watch some cheesy animation, which fortunately is not nearly as bad as the Wii one, but it's still an animation nevertheless that's kind of like, what the hell is this? But to 3DS's credit, the games are a lot smaller. So for me at least, and my connection speed, they don't take very long to download. So it's all good from that perspective. And I like that there's videos that are easy, quick and easy to access, and there's screenshots. It's definitely improved. I still want to see background downloads and more demos, but we'll see how that pans out.
You definitely, one thing that hasn't gotten much attention in the media, but I think is just really well done, informative, and fun to watch all in 3D is Nintendo Video. Or it's called Nintendo Show, excuse me. I'm getting it mixed up with the app. It's called Nintendo Show.
Yeah.
And it's, I think there's like 5 or 6 episodes. It looks like they're making it bi-weekly and you access it through the eShop and it's, they usually have like at the end exclusive footage, but it's just a really well done 5-minute 3D show about the eShop and 3DS.
Really? So, I've totally stayed away from it. I haven't watched a single episode because I think the first week that I had my 3DS and the show that was up, it was this, the host, this blonde chick, she's like super serious, no expression on her face, just staring angrily out at me. And I'm like, I don't know if this is because she's talking about Skyward Sword or whatever, but I really have no interest in watching her glower at me. And I also just remembered how cheesy and awful Nintendo shows were on WiiWare, on the mm-hmm. Wii Shop, and I'm just like, I have no interest in watching anything like that.
It's not cheesy like Nintendo Wii. It's pretty, like, I mean, there's definitely some cheesy parts, but it's just more of like, informative game trailers, game information, stuff like that. I think it's really well done. I think
I'll watch one.
And and for listeners, if you've been staying, because at first I was apprehensive too, and I like it's definitely like a pro tip. I've enjoyed it every week that it's been on, and they've had cool little bits. I mean, it may be dated for you because like I know that there was like a Super Mario 3D Land sneak peek back probably in like October. And it was cool to see the footage in 3D, you know? So
oh,
they
yeah,
just,
definitely.
It's cool to see that stuff. But back to the games, what games did you pick up from the eShop now that you finally have access to DSiWare and eShop games?
Well, because you insisted it, Evan, both a year ago and also just when I got my 3DS, the first game I got was Pictobits.
I heart Pictobits.
And I don't see what the fuss is about. I was pretty underwhelmed with it and actually have not played it since I first bought it the night, which is like the first night I ever played my 3DS, which was a couple weeks ago. I didn't like it. I didn't like the gameplay and the touch controls are really picky in terms you have to be very, it's like very pixel specific, precise, which makes sense with the stylus, but I ended up making mistakes and getting annoyed with it. And I remember hearing that the music is supposed to be just so freaking cool and retro loving, and it is retro music that's like the artwork in the game comes in piece by piece. It builds and builds, but it really didn't do anything for me either. So I'm like, well, after that disappointment, I'm going to get the art style game that I want, which is Box Life, which I actually really liked. It's cheesy. And it's a bit of a challenge because 3D realization in my mind is not always the easiest thing for me, but I really like the presentation music and challenge. And I also got Shantae, Risky's Revenge.
Have you gotten a chance to play that?
I did. I had somewhere that I had to go. I'm like, dang it, I have to play this at least for 5 minutes, just 5 minutes. And I was really happy with the graphics. They're really well done. just like the best of the old 16-bit days. And there's a lot more dialogue and story than I expected. I didn't realize that it was going to be so talky, so I didn't get as far. I was like, all right, come on, let's get on with the action. Come on.
Oh, yeah. It definitely
is. What that really surprised me is I did not anticipate to see that many heaving bosoms within 5 minutes.
I had the exact same thoughts.
I'm like, this is like Dead or Alive. There's like so many bouncing and moving around breasts. It's just like, whoa, they're everywhere.
I agree. It was shocking for me. And I also had the same thought about it. It starts off very talk heavy, which threw me off.
And I don't mind. I think it's cool. I love it when action games have story, Mario. But I wasn't expecting it, and I was in a rush. So I'm like, come on, hurry up. But it was still, and there's like some inappropriate but likely to be missed adult humor too. So it's tongue in cheek, and the developers know that they're throwing bouncing breasts everywhere. And they're making sexual jokes. And I think pubescent children will definitely notice the bouncing breasts, but they may miss some of the silly, crude jokes that are in there as well, which I thought was kind of fun. I'm like, wow, that's totally inappropriate, but funny. And I like it.
Oh, definitely. It's a great game. And it's funny. PictoBits, I think one of the reasons we talked about it during the pre-show warm-up about how basically there is trial and error, and that may be one of the things that frustrates you. But yeah, you really have to get used to the stylus controls.
But it's like Operation. Remember the board game Operation?
Uh-huh.
You have to have a very steady and precise hand. And when we talk about 3D visuals on 3DS, we'll talk about why that's an issue for me.
Okay. And then Box Life, I also have Box Life, and it's funny because that's probably my least favorite art style game for the DSi. There are games that you like, so it just shows, I mean, different tastes
for different folks.
There you go. Well, yeah, and I think ultimately having the 3DS, one of the main features, and it's in the name, and it's been a highly contested feature. Some people have called this a gimmick, is the 3D aspect of the system, the glasses-free 3D. So, Noah, do you heart it or discard it? What are your thoughts on the Nintendo 3DS's 3D?
I 100% heart it. I am totally on a 3D mania kick right now. As you may have
I just
heard,
picture you running around screaming, 3D.
Wow, 3D! Party in 3D! As I've mentioned in other podcasts, I also recently got a new television set. That's not only widescreen, not only supports HDMI, but it's also 3D, which was actually a very tertiary supplementary feature, not really a must-have feature. But I'm like, all right, since I'm doing this, I might as well commit to it and get the coolest version, which is the active shutter glasses, the expensive glasses version. And when I've experienced it on my PS3, that is 3D gaming, I'm like, wow, I love this. It's so great. And I finally got to have my very own 3DS that wasn't tethered to some strange model at E3 that I could hold. And I could hold at a specific position that's not tethered to a store display. I can have it exactly where I feel comfortable with it. And that makes all the difference in the world. And I played in 3D almost 95% of the time. And I was worried that I wasn't going to be able to because I had started to get the impression that people who have corrective vision where they have to wear contacts or glasses frequently don't like it in 3D, or they get headaches, or it just doesn't work for them. But I've had no issues at all. I really love playing Mario 3D Land in 3D. I've played almost all of the game in 3D. And even just basic interfaces, whether it's title screens or the 3DS's main menu and the little title graphics that appear for each little channel or piece of software, it's great. It's like I can't get enough of it. And I'm really happy that the 3DS is all about 3D because I love it so much. Unlike my PS3 and my 360, where 3D games are only going to come once in a blue moon, the 3DS mandates that every game released for it has to have a 3D mode, as so far as I know. At least that's been true up to now. I guess it's not required if they wanted to make a game with more visual horsepower. They could say, sorry, this is 2D only. But I'm really excited to know that pretty much any game I buy in 3DS is going to have those awesome 3D visuals because I love it. And I feel like the 3D slider, I don't keep it at the max. I keep it at about, I'd say 80% maybe is where it's at.
Me too.
It feels like just the right comfort. I almost feel like the depth for me of that slider is really about how far away I hold it from my eyes. Where it's like if I put it at max, I feel like I need to have the system further away from me, whereas if it's not as intense of a 3D, it feels better closer up. I don't know if that's true for you.
No, I definitely agree. I keep it about 3/4 the way up probably, and I'll shift it. Sometimes like if it's late at night or I'm feeling tired or my eyes are feeling heavy, I might bring it down to just a quarter. But I rarely put my system in 2D mode. I really like the added depth. And I don't necessarily understand all the hate towards 3D, because if you don't like it, there's nothing on the system that keeps that slider up. The slider is there for a reason.
Yeah.
But I just I'll say it right off the bat, the 3D, at least so far, even in Mario 3D Land, it doesn't totally alter the game, but it definitely enhances the visual presentation.
There is one level where you have to fall. I would say like 500, 600 feet. It's some kind of cliff level where you have to jump down and then jump down again and jump down again. And it's not so much about just being precise about it. You just have to do it. And it actually gave me some vertigo. I was so into the game at the moment. Like, whoa, this is really intense. It's like I'm skydiving. And I just loved that. And you can't do that without 3D. And then the special optical illusion MC Escher style challenge rooms that require the use of 3D, so you know exactly where bricks are because they're not exactly how they would be in a 2D world. It's awesome. Really cool. Oh,
definitely. And I just love those aspects of it. The whole gimmick thing to me is more graphical horsepower a gimmick. I mean, this is just another visual enhancement that you're receiving. Yeah. Why is it something that bothers people so much is, I guess, my question. And I'm sure we have listeners right now who are maybe pounding on their keys, and we would love to hear what your beef is with this. But I'm with Noah. I think, I don't know if glasses, I think it'll eventually all 3D will be glasses free, but
yeah,
3D is here to stay, and it's going to become more prevalent, not only on 3DS where it's required, but I think all the other systems, home console systems, it's going to be something that just it's like HD uptake as more 3D TVs get up there, and the technology is definitely getting cheap enough where it's going to become a big thing. But
yeah, I would not play Uncharted 3 any other way. I started it just last week in 3D, and they're really clever about adding things to give perspective and depth to the level design where stuff will be in the foreground or far in the background to really sell it. And I just love it. It's so cool. And it's like, I want everything to be in 3D now. However, there are moments where I turn it off on 3DS, and it's usually on the really challenging, frustrating levels where, and it turns out that when I get stressed out and I'm trying to do a maneuver and I'm getting kind of angry at the game or at my performance, really, I'm projecting at the game, I'll push harder on the buttons. Or I'll kind of grip the system harder, or I'll kind of twist the system just a little bit. I'm not like one of those,
and you're messing up your viewpoint. Yeah.
But I do it. And you know, with 3D, with the glasses-free 3D on 3DS, the shimmer happens. The screen will darken. I mean, even if you tilt it up and down versus left and right, it'll get darker. The viewing angle will totally change. And sometimes it's just a shimmer, but it's just frustrating enough that it's like, all right, enough with the 3D. I want to get through this level. So I'll turn it off, and then I'll turn it back on after I get through that level, because it does make a difference for me as an experienced Mario gamer. It's like, all right, this shimmering, lighter, darker screen is just making it harder for me to get through this, and I need to be able to press really hard on the buttons to get through it. So I'll sacrifice it momentarily, but I do always end up going back. And even like the stuff that's like Steel Diver in Mario 3D Land, where you get up to the periscopes, and you can look all the way around the level and look for toads standing on platforms miles away. Mm-hmm. I actually can leave it in 3D there too. And that's weird because you have to keep your head robot aligned with the system for the 3D effect to still work. But it comes really naturally. I didn't find it to be a challenge at all. It's just when I get really stressed out and I'm pressing really hard in the system and start tilting it uncontrollably.
Yeah,
that's when I go off.
3D almost has it's just like, it's the dirty word in gaming universe right now, that motion controls. If you bring it up, it just drives people crazy for some reason. And we'll be talking about motion controls as well later in the show. But with all of this brought together, your first couple of weeks with the 3DS, no, and now that it's been on store shelves for, at least in North America, for, what, 8-9 months, do you recommend other people that have been on the fence or haven't even been thinking about the system, do you recommend buying one?
I do, if it's bundled with the game. Which is weird because I'm in a unique position. I'm in a unique position because I was able to get my 3DS for $145, which I felt was sweet spot price for me and more than fair. It's a deal. Is it worth $180 without a game?
170
or 170? It's like I'm not quite as sure about that. I don't know why. It's only like a $25 difference. I think it's just the number. And the psychology that I have associated with 170 and above. But I feel that finally there are, between Mario Kart 7 and Mario 3D Land and the game and Revelations, Resident Evil Revelations coming out in just a couple months, there is definitely must-have reasons to get the system. And so I do recommend it, provided that you are comfortable with that price point. I'm still getting used to the whole $40 game thing. That is painful. I don't like it. I'm still very much used to my handheld games being $30. And these games, in my opinion, yeah, they're graphically more impressive. They're not, oh my God, impressive yet, because I've only looked at Mario 3D Land and Pac-Man. But
Pac-Man.
It's not, you know, Resident Evil or Dead or Alive or anything like that. If you're comfortable with that, that's cool. Just adjust to the price. Adjusting to the price point is difficult, and I'm much more inclined to say, I really want that game, or I want it, but I'm going to wait for the price to drop, which is weird because I've done that with my 360 and PS3, where it's like, I really don't like paying $60 for games. I'm going to wait for it to drop down to $40 or $30 unless I really, really want it. And I feel like I'm going to be doing that with 3DS. I'm going to be held back from making purchases, whereas on the DS and the Game Boy Advance and the systems before that, I was much more likely to make impulsive purchases when they were $30.
Well, one positive about buying the system later in the game is there are titles like Pilot Wings Resort, which I highly recommend, is now retailing a lot of places for less than $20.
Yeah.
Then 10 Dogs, if that's your thing, is also retailing for less. And then Super Street Fighter 4 3D Edition I've seen for less than $20 too. So there's definitely some quality titles you can look at picking up that may not be bundled with a system like Mario 3D Land or Ocarina of Time 3D that are also cheap. And then the eShop, like we said, is picking up Steam. We didn't talk about it, but I picked up Pushmo this week, and then there was Kirby's Adventure 3D edition a couple of weeks ago. So there's cheaper games on the eShop, and hopefully that the influx of games there continues to keep on rolling. But speaking of things in the future, with like Resident Evil Revelations and things coming up next year, we're going to be looking at Miyamoto and whether he's really stepping down and retiring from his current position or not, coming up next in our Master Key discussion. So this week's Master Key discussion is definitely a key to Nintendo's future, and that's in regards to Miyamoto reportedly retiring from his current supervisor role and looking at doing more smaller and personal projects within Nintendo. Now, he's not retiring from the company. That was not part of the original article that was at Wired.com's Game Life blog by Chris Kohler. And in this story, we'll give you the direct quotes from Miyamoto that were translated. And remember, these translations came from Nintendo itself. But Miyamoto basically had these things to say. These are two of the most prominent quotes. "Inside our office, I've been recently declaring, I'm going to retire. I'm going to retire," Miyamoto told Kohler through his interpreter. "I'm not saying that I'm going to retire from game development altogether. What I mean by retiring is retiring from my current position." And basically, for you unfamiliar, Miyamoto has been in a supervisor role where he really looks in at projects, give advice,
about things, stuff like that. And he continues to say, what I really want to do is be in the forefront of game development once again myself, probably working on a smaller project with even younger developers, where I might be interested in making something that I can make myself by myself, something really small. Now, hours after this came out, it was basically overnight. The story came up late at night. Other stories broke. Nintendo PR spokesperson saying this is not that this isn't true, but no, do not worry. Miyamoto is not retiring. He's staying in the same position at Nintendo. And keep in mind, this came after there was a 2% drop in Nintendo stocks. And then to add on to this, Nintendo had a story. Miyamoto talked to the Wall Street Journal. And one of the telling quotes to kind of combat what was reported about him stepping down is he said, we have to construct the structure so that the organization, so that it can make it without me. I should also admit that it might be better without me. I mean, that a different approach and a different talent might emerge, though I shouldn't dwell on this because then the article might indeed say, Mr. Miyamoto is thinking about retiring, because this is not the case. So it's turned into his... Miyamoto retiring from his position or not. Noah, initial thoughts after these two stories broke about what's going on?
What was initially silly, or it wasn't silly, it was kind of, you know, a major moment in gaming was I started getting all these text messages to my phone. Miyamoto's retired, blah, blah, you have to go check it out. During my Uncharted night.
I'm playing Uncharted.
Back off. I only get one night a week to play it. Buzz off. No. But I remember my thinking when I thought this was true that, wow, okay, well, this is a little bit earlier than I expected it, but it was inevitable that it needed to happen at some point. And I guess it's, you know, what's done is done. And that's, and the more I thought about it, the more I felt that it was a good thing for Nintendo. Mm-hmm. But it's not happening, as it turns out. And at the time when I heard that, I didn't know any of the additional caveats about that he was going to still be with the company, but work with really new junior developers or young developers to work on much smaller projects. And when I heard that, I'm like, well, that's really cool too. I would actually prefer that to what Miyamoto has been doing since the GameCube years, which, as I remember, that was the first time there was news that shuttled around the internet that Miyamoto's role is changing. He's no longer going to be a director of games. He's going to be more of an overall supervisor, lending his golden touch, lightly so, to a variety of games, making sure that every game is great versus just whatever game he works on, which seemed kind of weird, and back then it was like, oh, come on, I really like him working on games because the ones he makes are really good, but I guess I can understand why the company would want to maximize this resource. And then eventually he has to go, too. He's, you know, in his late 50s, I believe, now. And
I think he's 59.
Yeah. So traditional retirement age may be coming up, but then I think of Mr. Who is... the original CEO of Nintendo.
Yamaguchi?
Yeah. Well, he's involved like until he's like 5,000 years old. I think much older than Miyamoto is right now. And I'm like, surely Miyamoto's going to be around that long, right? I mean, wishful thinking, but I believe he's got such a deified status at Nintendo that at times it's detrimental for the rest of the talent working there, that he has to sign off on everything, that he has to be the one that comes up with the new ideas, or else you're working on an existing IP, you're making a sequel, unless Miyamoto's come up with it. And Nintendo really, really could use, A, some new IPs, new intellectual properties, new series, whatever, and B, some really revolutionary new takes on their classic franchises. And I know that sounds a little bit heretical, and perhaps it's a little bit contradictory, because I do love the sequels that come out that are rather formulaic for Mario and for Zelda and for Donkey Kong and for F-Zero, and not so much with Metroid because that did get some reinvention. But I also would love to see something different done with them. And different doesn't always work out well. I mean, I could think of games like series like Contra, Final Fantasy, and Castlevania, some of my favorite series that have tried new things and sucked.
Fallen on their face.
But if everybody's entrenched with at least the game design laws of Miyamoto, which pretty much think if you are a developer at Nintendo, you have to follow them, that I would hope that when Nintendo decides to get more experimental with its classic franchises or with its new game ideas, that they won't suck. I mean, and we see examples of that when you look at something like Rhythm Heaven or the Art Style series, that when Nintendo developers get to think outside the box and do something different, they still make really great games. There's very few stinkers out there. I think they all know the core tenets of making really great games, thanks to Mr. Miyamoto and many other terrific, outstanding talents in-house. But Miyamoto's legacy, his shadow runs very long over all of the titles, and he's behind a lot of the, and I don't know how much of it is his, he's just echoing the company statements, but sometimes I wonder how much he's involved, and Nintendo's online strategy is lacking. And I wonder how much he has to do with that, because he's often the mouthpiece that communicates to the rest of the world why that is. And just other things that frustrate people about Nintendo, how much of this has to do with Miyamoto's involvement. And that's why, I mean, when we saw it when Mr. Iwata came on and shook things up, it was very beneficial for Nintendo. We got the DS, we got the Wii, and I think allowing other people, and Miyamoto, I think, even recognizes this in his quotes, allowing other people to shine and really step up to the plate and go in new directions and try new things will only be beneficial for Nintendo.
Yeah, I was also really excited when the initial story broke, just because Miyamoto is obviously a creative mind, and I feel like it kind of handicaps him in a way, being in a supervisor role, not getting to let his creative juices flow on a project that he's in love with, and instead have to kind of try to spread it around in small dosages.
As you noted, the last game he was truly director of was Ocarina of Time, which is a long time ago.
13 years ago. And between then, he's been mainly in supervisor positions. They were talking about how he was a supervisor. He really helped with Western game development. I mean, there's stories about him and GoldenEye and other games. He also helped with Metroid Prime, obviously. He gave the idea about the visors, a bug's head on Samus Aran.
Middle Gear Solid. Twin Snakes, and he was involved with that, and Retro.
Yeah, definitely. And then he's gone on to oversee the whole company and everything. So one of the things that came out was obviously the Wall Street Journal, and then all these stories were just saying, oh, he's not going anywhere because Nintendo said that his position has not changed. But one important thing to note is Nintendo has not come out at all and said anything about the Wired story being wrong. And in addition, Chris Kohler has publicly stated that he stands by his story and what Miyamoto said through Miyamoto's own translator, who Chris Kohler claims that translator has been with Miyamoto for a very, very long time. So it kind of leaves you speculating on what exactly is going on. And my take, basically, is that everybody's right. All of these stories are right. No one's wrong. And getting the full truth is kind of reading between the lines and reading certain quotes. And for my money, Miyamoto's position will always be the same until he retires. And maybe they'll just keep that on him even when he is retired. He'll come back to speak during big public shows. But publicly, his position will never change. What is he, like the general manager of Nintendo of Japan? But I think privately within the company, his supervisor role will be diminished and he's going to do what he wants to do. And possibly that's directing his own game, whether that's just him or by a small team or something picking up, or whether that's him. He always talks about Pikmin 3, whether he's decided, you know what, I've got an idea and I want to run with it. I don't want to oversee these other projects. What is your take? Do you see a similar thing that I'm seeing, Noah, or do you think that he's going to end up just being in the supervisor role until he retires?
I think that his title is going to remain the same, and I'd like to believe that he'll be allowed to secretly do what he really wants to do and work on small projects, but I'm just not sure how much he's just kind of trapped in both the title and the role.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that the citing that Nintendo stock fell 2%, I mean, 2% is nothing compared to how much it's fallen earlier in the year over other things. And like I said, Miyamoto inevitably needs to retire. He has to. It's a fact of life. He's not immortal.
You don't know that.
And, you know, why not do it now while things are kind of down in the dumps anyways and get it over with so that when Nintendo inevitably gets back into another great position again, they don't have to worry about, like, oh, Nintendo's riding so high. And like, and then I think there'd be a much more staggering stock market reaction if Miyamoto, like, Miyamoto's gone. Oh, whoa. I'm like, just let the man do what he wants if you're going to let him do that. I would love to see him do something different.
I would make
a small game.
In the smaller games, and why we're talking about the smaller games, people may think, well, hey, if Miyamoto wants to make his own game, he's probably been playing iPhone games. And in one of the stories he talks about in regard to smartphones, he says another thing he says Nintendo isn't behind on mobile games. While games like Angry Birds for smartphones and tablets may be all the rage, Miyamoto said Nintendo isn't going to make its software available for download on those devices. Why? He prefers buttons and a physical connection to the game. That said, I would love to see Miyamoto really lead, and by lead, I'm not saying supervise, but just start up this. He talks about working with younger developers and really start up Nintendo's downloadable efforts. And they've done a good job. I mean, no, you're talking about the art style games you downloaded and how you liked Box Life that were from Nintendo. But really just start putting some more resources there with these small man teams and start building out the eShop and obviously the Wii U's whatever they call their shop. I'm guessing the eShop will be all tied together by that point. I'd really love him to be at the digital front lines for Nintendo and see what crazy ideas he can come up with. And I also, another reason I stick to my basic theory is if you look at Game Informer has an interview and they pulled out some of the quotes with Anuma, who's obviously taken over the Zelda franchise in the past decade from Miyamoto, is he talks about how he's talking about wrapping up Skyward Sword and everything, but he goes on to talk about the future of the franchise and what he's looking at doing. And they're talking about voice acting and everything.
Yeah, I really like this quote.
But he goes on to say, I started working on this series, not at the beginning, but partway through its history in regard. I think he took over with Majora's Mask was the one he directed. I think because of that, early on, I was looking objectively at the series and how we could change small individual elements within it rather than looking at how the series should evolve. As time has passed, particularly in the last few years, I've started to think a lot more about how I can take the series and really make it my own Zelda and evolve it further. As Mr. Miyamoto has allowed me to take the reins on the Zelda series, ultimately that's what I need to do. Perhaps some people will think it's a little bit late for me to start thinking about that, but as time goes by, that's becoming more of a theme in how I'm approaching the series. This came days before the Miyamoto story came out, and I think it ties in rather well with him stepping away from the Marios and Zeldas and him realizing, you know what, he trusts me in what I'm doing. Skyward Sword just came out to great reviews once again. It's mine, and I have to accept those responsibilities. And look at Mario. I mean, we just talked about Mario 3D Land from EAD Tokyo. And this is their third just amazing Mario game. Super Mario Galaxy 1, Super Mario Galaxy 2, Super Mario 3D Land. I mean, they've arguably made
some of the best Marios, the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
So both of his babies, basically, Mario and Zelda, are in such good hands right now. I mean, and who knows what they could do on their own. But, I mean, I feel like he has to feel good about where they are. What better time to step away?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
To step away. I mean, I don't think either of the series has been in such good hands or at just its strongest as they've aligned right now. Even though Nintendo's had this bumpy year, I mean, just with both of those two major franchises being in such good spots, I think is interesting. So, and yeah, I'm playing through Skyward Sword and it's great. And they're definitely mixing up some things. And like you said, since Galaxy, Mario's mixed it up a lot. I mean, Galaxy really kind of turned it on its head and now they're mixing the 2D and the 3D. And like Miyamoto even says, I would love to see these teams basically unshackled. And I don't think Miyamoto's being a hindrance to any of these games. I'm sure he's helping a lot, but let's see what they do with them. Let's see.
Yeah, I feel like they want to make sure that he's happy, though. I feel very likely like we need to make sure that we win his approval. We have a lot of respect for him and really want to make him happy and live up to his legacy. And we don't want to get too radical because of that, because we don't want to upset him, even if he might be telling them, do something more creative. They're probably like, well, we could do this, but we probably shouldn't. That's too crazy. Let's respect the legacy that this man has created and do something traditional.
And ultimately, they are his creations. I mean, obviously,
it makes sense.
Give the artist the okay. And maybe he would still have some of that role, but Anuma quote really stands out to me of finally taking on all the responsibilities and knowing that it's his franchise now and he needs to be the one. He can't look back. And I think we're definitely we talked about it in the first episode of this podcast and why we're creating it. And I think this really reinforces that Nintendo's at a turning point. A lot of things, 3DS is finally taking off. We have Wii U in the future. I think we're going to see Miyamoto take a less supervisor role. I don't think we'll notice any differences, and we may never know. Noah, I think at E3, he'll obviously be on stage. He'll be announcing whatever crazy 3DS games and big Mario games like Super Mario Brothers Mii for Wii U being a launch title. He'll be there because they're still his creations. But back in the company, I think he's going to do his own thing and hopefully with small teams. And we're going to see these other franchises really branch out. And like you said, hopefully, if it's not him creating the IPs with his small ideas, hopefully it frees up other developers within the company to start playing with new IPs. Because I definitely think that the Wii U needs a new IP from Nintendo within the first year.
Oh, I totally agree. Shoot, I've been saying that since GameCube.
Well, they had Luigi's Mansion. Mansion. I mean, a spinoff and a totally new franchise. So I think there's, in the future in regard to this, for people wondering, and Noah, if you want to disagree, please interject. I don't think we're going to hear much more about this. I think Miyamoto will still be selling the same story that he sold to the Wall Street Journal. Oh, I'm not retiring. I'm still definitely full into Nintendo.
Yeah.
But we'll never know exactly what role that is. I guess unless it comes up at E3 in the next couple of years that he does become majorly involved. But I think both of us, I'm speaking for both of us, keep our fingers crossed that he gets in and gets to direct a game within the next couple of years.
Yes. And I think his retirement, when it does come, will be much less of a surprise and probably something that's announced a year out or something like, and this is the last game he's going to work on and it comes out in 2 years and they're going to maximize it versus like, oops, it just leaked out.
Oh, yeah, and in regard to, I sort of disagree maybe with you on his retirement. I could just see, like, even if he does retire, Noah, I think he'll just still be a part of Nintendo. Like, I don't even know if they'll announce it for a long time. I think it could be the opposite of that, where he still, because I mean, he could retire and still just show up at E3s or whatever else and be like,
yeah. I think from the perspective of trying to keep the share prices stable, dragging something like that out, prepping people, to where like there's going to be an initial small knee-jerk reaction because it's like, well, it's been announced, but it's not going to really happen. So we'll be okay with it. And then by the time it finally happens, it's going to be just such stale news that there won't be a knee-jerk react, a steep drop, because, all right, he's finally gone. It's the end. I'll just be like, all right, yeah, we knew this was going to happen. Who knows? Maybe this was a test of that concept. I don't know.
And I think one thing to think about in all this is that you may not even imagine playing a role in bringing up younger developers to the forefront of gamers' minds and the public's is the WADA ask features. And I think in recent years, more than ever, we have publicly seen more Nintendo designers.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's really cool that that Nintendo's doing that. And it's kind of unexpected. It feels uncharacteristic because they're so private about how their company works, and that they do these after-the-fact autopsies. It's really fascinating to learn about the culture and the people, the faces, and the personalities behind these games.
Look at this past E3 with them having the different developers for the Zelda series coming out on stage. I mean, when was the last time, other than Miyamoto, a different Nintendo game designer came out at the E3 stage?
That's very true. Very true. It's always been Miyamoto.
And only Miyamoto. And they trotted out other people at GDC last year. They had different talks going on. They've definitely put retro studios at the forefront, especially in America, of people. And I mean, so this is definitely not odd for most major companies, but for Nintendo, they've definitely publicly put a lot behind some of these developers getting to talk about it. And just the Game Informer feature article that Miyamoto wasn't even featured in that interview, I think, is a telling sign that they're letting other people talk about the series and everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just...
It's a good thing overall. It's a good thing for Miyamoto, for his personal sanity. It's a good thing from a business perspective and for Nintendo to be maturing its workforce and promoting all of its workforce as being talented and appreciated. And it's good for the company to be ready to evolve and be more competitively positioned for the future.
Yep, it's a win-win-win. We mediated this very nicely, Noah, to make it a win-win-win situation for everyone. Listeners, even you got to win. So we'll keep talking about Nintendo coming up. It may not be on the same level as Miyamoto, but there was some also big development in the Nintendo world, starting off with Xenoblade. So a lot of Nintendo news has happened since our last episode, Noah, and one of the biggest things to come out is Xenoblade is now officially coming, not to North America, but at least to the United States. So Canada, sorry about that. Xenoblade was announced by Nintendo of America. It is coming in early April, and it's going to be a GameStop exclusive, though you may order it from Nintendo.com to get it sent to your house. Noah?
Evan?
Were you waiting for Xenoblade? Can you believe that it's coming out here?
I'm really surprised because it happened out of nowhere. Normally, I don't like things on Facebook because I think it's kind of cheesy and a waste of my time. But when I saw this, I'm like, all right, I'm going to like Nintendo's posting of concept art from Xenoblade because I'm really... very happy that this game is coming to North America. I've been intrigued by it ever since I found out that it took place on the bodies of two giant deity-styled titans. I'm like, wow, that's really cool. And the trailer that was released for it, I'm like, wow, I'm really excited about it. Josh Johnson's review of it on the site and the things that he's mentioned just over email to the staff about it at nintendojo.com. Everything I've heard about it just makes me think maybe this will finally be the first RPG in like 10 years that I finally finish.
Oh, yeah. It's a big one. 100 hours. Peaked.
Yeah. I don't know. That's like a really significant commitment for me at this age.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I'll do it.
One thing I want to get out there right away is I give a lot of props to Operation Rainfall. And for listeners unfamiliar with Operation Rainfall, it was basically a social media initiative to get Xenoblade Chronicles, The Last Story, which is another RPG from developer Mistwalker, and it's headed by the man who created the original Final Fantasy. And then the last one's an action RPG called Pandora's Tower. But the main goal was to get Xenoblade Chronicles, especially considering its release and translation being brought over to Europe. And I've thought that Xenoblade was going to come next year. In my mind, it was Nintendo doesn't have much next year.
That was the only reason. Yeah, I thought so too.
So why release it when you could wait until next year to release it when there's just a huge gap in the schedule once again? But I really don't know. Now that it's been announced as a GameStop exclusive, and the last time I can remember Nintendo doing a store exclusive is with Chibi Robo Patrol Park, I think it was called, and that was a Walmart exclusive for a DS game. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Noah.
I remember Park Patrol.
And can you think of any other store exclusive games that Nintendo's released?
I'm pretty sure there was at least one or two others, but I can't recall. I do think it's interesting, a bit controversial. Usually I only think of store exclusives anymore with respect to pre-release pre-order bundles, which really annoy me, by the way. If this is what it takes to get the game out here, I'm not going to complain about it, but it was kind of like a huh moment. And then the double huh was that it was GameStop. I mean, I'll take GameStop over Walmart, but GameStop, it was really weird because I can't think of any GameStop exclusives that ever existed before.
And when the news came out and people, it kind of leaked because I think a GameStop employee showed that it was on their systems and it said GS exclusive. I had a hard time buying it just because over the past year or maybe two, Nintendo's had such strong retail ties to Best Buy. Like, I'm pretty sure
Target and Walmart.
And, well, I mean, in regard to like the Nintendo Zone for the 3DS was it. Maybe it's not now, but exclusively tied to Best Buy.
Oh, yeah.
And then for the launch of the system, I feel like Reggie was at a Best Buy for the launch day back in March. But, I mean, I guess at the same time, they had the Powder Blue exclusive Walmart Black Friday system just a couple of weeks ago. So I'm sure they try to spread around the retail love. And I'm sure GameStop, a company that just gets hammered for being an evil corporation, kind of similar to Activision Blizzard, gets to look like the heroes. And I mean, yeah. I haven't seen them release anything yet, but they can say, you know what, like, we really wanted to bring this out for the fans.
Oh yeah. They can spin it that way.
Oh yeah, definitely. Personally, I vowed never to go to GameStop again because I despise the company. Now, that doesn't mean I despise you if you work there or have worked there in the past or enjoy the store.
Universal hatred.
It just means I hate the company's practice of selling new games that are used or been used by store employees. But that's a whole totally different topic.
Yes.
But because I am happy that Nintendo brought this over, and if GameStop did play a role in getting this brought out, then I'll give props where props is due. I have already pre-ordered the game. Because one thing that Noah's questioning, and I don't think you've gone out and pre-ordered it yet. I guess before I ask this, do you plan on getting it from GameStop now, or do you plan on possibly going through Nintendo.com?
I get the spirit of what you're talking about, and when I think of it from that perspective, I would consider going to Nintendo.com, but it's just a lot more convenient to get it at GameStop because I don't have to worry about it getting mailed to me. I can just go to a store across the street from my work or down the street from where I live and get it just like that. Plus, I also have a pre-order that I put down on Batman Arkham City that I ended up not collecting, so I just have that store credit. So I think I'm just going to go and swap it over to GameStop and get. And then that gives me two reasons. It's really easy for me to pick it up. And I already have money in GameStop's coffers that I need to reallocate to something else. And this would be the perfect thing for that.
Great. Yeah, I did get a little nervous when I pre-ordered it at GameStop. Two reasons. The first thing was there's a long line because it's the holidays at GameStop. And I said, the person asked me, I guess they were trying to divide people up in lines, and asked, what are you doing? What do you need to do? And I said, I wanted to pre-order a game. Oh, what game? Xenoblade Chronicles. Oh, is that for PS3 or 360?
What?
So that made me a little nervous.
Oh, my gosh.
And then when I finally put my money down, the person was like, great, that said the game's coming out sometime in March, which I guess that shouldn't make me, it should maybe make me happy that it's coming out earlier than expected, but I think Nintendo said it's coming out April 2nd. So I, in the back of my mind, I was like, I hope this GameStop has it together and I will get my copy. They're not like overtaking copies though. Maybe no one's heard of it, but that does bring us to our next point. With this being a GameStop exclusive, how limited of a printing run will this be?
I'm glad it's going to be limited.
Do you think it could be less than 100,000?
No, I think it'll be probably 250,000. That's my guess.
I feel it. That's a pretty big run for how many games?
It really depends on the pre-order numbers, but I would like to believe or hope that, I mean, think of The Conduit 2, which was a game, or what was it? House of the Dead Overkill, which were two games that were really hyped. And I think in their opening week, they sold like 50 to 70,000, which was a failure. But I'd like to think that that many pre-orders will come in for Xenoblade Chronicles, meaning that they need to have a little bit more than that to sell. Now, they may go the 100,000 route if there's only 50,000 pre-orders, which is entirely possible.
My mindset is basically a few things. So first off, how many people, like some of our fellow Steffers, just ended up importing this game?
Oh, that's true. The really hardcore fans, they already have the game.
Who would be the people? I mean, Operation Rainfall, hopefully, they're very vocal now that this has come out. Not that they should give up on the other games they want to come out, but I think you definitely have to be thankful for this game coming out and spread the word that it is coming out. But being a GameStop exclusive, how many retail locations does GameStop have? I don't think it's more than like 30,000, is it?
That's still a ton.
It's still a ton, but I'm thinking, how many copies per store is that place going to get? So I wouldn't think more than like 10, at least initially. So that brings you up to
300,000.
And that'd be at the max. And you brought the number. I would think it's more half of that. 100. I mean, I guess you're right. It could be around the 100 to 250,000 region. My thought is Nintendo can always do another run of games. So I would think with it being exclusive and all this worry that they would start small, because then they could do the whole, this game sold out. We'll have it. But I mean, that's just good PR. Like, this game is so popular, it's sold out. It's good for GameStop. It's good for Nintendo. They can do another run, take new pre-orders or whatever. I mean, that's something that I feel like other smaller RPG publishers are good about doing. They kind of make sure that they hit that initial run, and then if there's still demand for the product, they can reprint later on. But that said, I think if you were looking forward to this game at all, I would definitely look at possibly pre-ordering, since it is an exclusive, and I am definitely against giving GameStop your money early so they can build interest on it. But I think just with the way things are, or you can go through Nintendo.com, but I think, Noah, obviously, if you want that game day one, you'll have to go through GameStop. But I think I'm glad Xenoblade's coming. I think we all are. It gives us something to play on our Wii's next year, especially when everyone's done with Skyward Sword. Although, that said, no, there is the new Rhythm Heaven game coming out next year and Mario Party 9.
Stop the press.
Three games to play. That's better than Low. You could say that's better than... you could argue that there were two major games this year with Kirby and Zelda. And I can't think that was Mario Sports Mix, I think, was released.
Yeah.
and Conduit 2. But yeah, so it's definitely coming up to in regards to quality right there early on in the year. Xenoblade Chronicles, obviously a huge heavy hitter for the more dedicated fan base. And we've moving on about dedicated fan base and what people care about in regard to the 3DS. We've talked about it a lot already, but there was the system update that we commented on a bit, but just to touch on some few more factoids about the system, the Street Pass Me Plaza got a big update, and Noah, you won't even realize the changes if you haven't played with it, but they've added an Find Me 2, and you can only play that if you've beat Find Me, as a That's heads right. up. A bunch of new picture pieces and pictures. There's now like a music player so you can listen to the music. And the music throughout the Mii Plaza, Noah, especially in regard to Find Me, is really well done. Like, it's like, I'm glad they added this music feature. I haven't seen it reported much, but it's nice to be able to just play those songs, the ones you like. And then one thing that's probably gotten a lot of people up in a tizzy is there are accomplishments, basically the equivalent to achievements and trophies in the Find Me games.
Yeah.
Which are interesting that they're accomplishments, but they're really funny. I mean, right off the bat, I got a bunch of them, but they have a lot of different ones. Like, I just unlocked an accomplishment for missing a sword attack 3 times in a row. And it's a turn-based RPG, so you really have no control over that. But it's funny that you get an accomplishment for something like that. And it really just made me think that what funny things Nintendo could do with accomplishments. Just by how, like, look at Treehouse and how funny they are in their translations. Or so many Nintendo games, the tongue-in-cheek dialogue, or just how intelligent.
Yeah, like Mario and Luigi games. For sure.
And what they could do to just make accomplishments more of a goofy. I mean, you could have your staples and beating the game, you get stuff, but it just makes me think of how much fun they could actually make accomplishments. And I'm curious, do you think that this is just opening the floodgates that we're going to see accomplishments become a system feature with 3DS and then eventually with a Wii U?
No.
No, you still don't buy it.
I don't, and the reason why is because Wii Sports Resort had them. Except they were stickers. But it was almost the exact same thing. Where, except I guess it was tied into unlocking stuff, but you still got them. You got stickers for accomplishing certain feats within the game. And people are like, oh, this is kind of interesting. It's something in disguise. And again, this is another one-off implementation of it, that it's not called stickers, which Tidman will be sad to hear, because I remember he always wanted things to be the Nintendo version of achievements to be stickers.
Ugh.
But well, they did it in Smash Brothers, you know, they gave you stickers and then you could put them on the trophies, which to me made absolutely no sense whatsoever.
There's trophies,
but I just don't, I feel like they're including it here as a one-off to encourage you to use the software, but it doesn't reflect a change in corporate strategy, because their stance has always been very stodgy and stingy about it, that we want you to experience the game and play it the way that you want to play it, and we don't want to drive you towards specific goals and accomplishments, because then you don't experience the same kind of magic and you don't actually play the game in an exploratory manner. You just start checking things off. But I kind of like, I'm not an achievement freak or a trophy freak from the PlayStation perspective, but I do really like them. They're nice little milestones that are recorded in an automated fashion of things that I do, and I am definitely not looking to get 100% completion on any game, but it's cool to see where I've been and what I've done. And I believe that most people are probably like that, and most people are not obsessive compulsive, must complete the game to 100%. There's nothing wrong with that, but saying the reason they're not going to do it is because they're assuming everyone is like that is pretty silly.
I like, I will acknowledge I do have that OCD tendency, and trophies
trophies actually do make me mindful of the, like, I do find myself looking at the trophy list and thinking about how I can get them during games. I mean, for one example, with Assassin's Creed 2 for the system, that's my only platinum, and I definitely did do everything so I could get that platinum, while if I just played the game without it, I probably would have just played the story and missed out on some of that stuff. Now, I still had a great time, but
your homework.
did it take away from me just enjoying the game for what it is? And in comparison, I'm playing Skyward Sword in about 30 hours in, and it's nice that I'm not thinking anything about that. Like, I really do, like,
you're taking
I don't know
face value.
I'm just enjoying the game at my leisure. I'm not worried about, ooh, I'd like to get this trophy because I see it there. So
Who would you know in a Zelda game that would happen? There are probably more people who are OCD about Zelda.
Oh, exactly.
Versus OCD gamers in general.
So it's just that it's a, like a really, if Nintendo, like, I think the reason that I'll be surprised if it's not in Wii U, especially Noah, is just because third-party devs want it. I feel like it's they're already doing it for the other systems, so why not? And I feel like it can get people to play their games longer, possibly, or invest in them more.
Yeah, but some third-party games already built them in. I can definitely remember, I think it might have even been DGA Hero. There are definitely some Nintendo games that I played on Wii. Well, there are games that I played on my Wii by third-party developers that had built-in achievements, like Conduit actually was one. Conduit 1 and 2 did that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, they do, but they would like it to be on a system value so people can display it, because then it becomes almost like an advertising thing to your friends. Like, ooh, they must have really liked the game because look at all these trophies they got, or
yeah,
Nintendo coins or whatever. And so I think it's inevitable that they're going to come. And where I really want to see them the most, ironically, Noah, is in regard to the virtual consoles, because then it's not something that I'm just playing the game and I'm playing it differently. It gives me an incentive to play those old games again to get accomplishments, like downloading the original Mario Brothers game again or Mario 3 so I can get it, stuff like that. So I think if it's a staggered release, the next place we'll see it is on the virtual console for the eShop, or maybe just eShop game downloads. But like you said, maybe not. And but looking into our crystal balls a little more, and speaking of Zelda, there was a story that came out that future Zeldas will stick with motion controls. And we just... we're touching on two hot topics with gamers. We did 3D earlier in the podcast, and now motion controls. No, you haven't played Skyward Sword yet.
Yeah, so I can't. Well, I played the demo at E3 a couple years ago.
Yeah, definitely. So
which was lengthy.
You basically have an outside perspective of not firsthand experience. You've kind of read a lot of the reviews. You are getting the game.
Yeah.
What
it has been foreseen.
Are you surprised by this? I mean,
yes.
Here's another Anuma quote. He says, honestly, think we cannot go back to button controls now. So I think that these controls, and by these, they mean Skyward Sword, will be used in future Zeldas too. You are surprised.
Yes.
Well, why are you surprised?
Why am I surprised? I'm surprised for two primary reasons. First of all, I do feel the bloom is off the motion control rose, to use a very cheesy cliche or metaphor. And I feel even Wii U demonstrates that, because the primary controller for Wii U is not the remote. Even though it fully supports the remote and games will use the remote, the main controller is a tablet, which basically is completely incompatible with using the remote. I cannot see how you can simultaneously use both devices in an intuitive manner. Unless you're drawing something with the remote on the tablet and you're using the remote as a pen. It just doesn't make any sense. I think especially with PlayStation Move, you can see that the market is not, yes, give us the next generation of motion controls, cannot have enough. Kinect is something different. It's proving to still be a successful decision for Microsoft and is novel, but I still don't think it's the de facto standard. And regardless of how excellently Skyward Sword demonstrates motion controls works for this particular game, and that it can work for an action-adventure genre, I was kind of ready to move on from it. I'm like, great, I'm ready to experience the pinnacle of motion control games. I know that it's going to be very good. It's not going to be perfect. They never are. But it'll still be very good. And then we can move on from this and see what they do with the tablet. I can understand the spirit of what they're saying, that it's much more engaging, and they finally executed it in a really good way, because it wasn't that great for Twilight Princess, and it was really just extraneous, annoying fluff in Mario Galaxy that was really unnecessary. And it's been really good in sports minigames, and it's been really good in first-person shooters, but it's really just not caught on sufficiently enough to really say, all right, this game will now be saddled with motion controls forever, to the detriment of Wii U's tablet controller. Really, and that's supposed to be the defining point of Wii U. It makes no sense to me. And it's like, yeah, but what about the handheld Zeldas? You know, I'm nitpicking a quote here, which, you know, he's maybe implicitly speaking about console Zeldas, but he's been involved with both, so I don't really know what he's talking about. I'm not sold on it. And I have the comments that I've seen and stories that have posted this on the internet have been of two camps, both people saying, well, of course, this is a natural evolution. The series has evolved just like it did in Ocarina of Time when it went into 3D. Now it's a motion game, and now it's a motion franchise like it. And other people who haven't played it at all, not even a demo, which I have played. It was a 20-minute demo. They're like, this sucks because I'm just over motion control gaming. But I think that is representative of a lot of people. And, you know, if the Wii truly revolutionized gaming across the board, every system would be using motion controls, period. And all the next generation systems would be exclusively motion, but we know that it's not going to be the case. People still like buttons. Just like Miyamoto said about mobile games and why they're not going to make cell phone games, he likes buttons and controllers, and they're still going to be an integral part. And I don't see motion being necessary.
Having played 30 plus hours of the game now, I can see exactly where he's coming from. Basically, freeing up a button and allowing there to be so many maneuvers with motion with the sword has made the most thought-provoking combat in a Zelda game ever. It's interesting. It's not going up and hitting A, or just, I think one of the most evolved fighting systems was probably Wind Waker, where you did the countering, so it was timing based. But other than that, it's been one button fighting compared to this, where you arguably have more than 8 directional ways to slash, including the poke, and then you have the shield with the other hand. It's not flawless, obviously, because you're working with motion controls and you're working with human interaction. It's like driving a car. There's going to be human errors, and then sometimes, possibly unlike cars, maybe my analogy doesn't work perfectly, but things are going to mess up with the connection, and those will get better over time. That said, this Zelda game with the dash, being able to dash instead of having the sword tied to it, just it really changes up a lot. The pointing function, how they use it to switch between weapons, how it's integral to so many of the weapons. I don't want to spoil too much stuff here in regards to the weapons, because, Noah, you haven't played the game yet, but almost all of them, or actually all of them, make use of the motion controls in interesting ways and work well. It works so well in this game, and it creates so many new mechanics, and it obviously plays a role in the story with the sword. I could definitely see them continuing down this path and just really possibly, not streamlining it more, but polishing it more. That said, Noah, I definitely understand your perspective in regard to the tablet, because at E3 they showcased HD Zelda experience, and they talked about how the tablet screen allows you to have the whole item screen right there, and you can just press a button to change your whatever you're using.
Yeah.
And while it's really easy to change weapons, I mean, that clears up the entire HUD. And now if you're using the Wii Remote controls for a Zelda game, you can't use one of the other highly touted Wii U features of throw the game on your screen and play it that way. So you would have to tie up your TV in regard to the game. So it's far off. It could go either way. Honestly, I'm kind of 50-50 split on this. I mean, right now, if the next Zelda game's so far off, who knows what's going to happen in the future. But I mean, I could see, like, I could see them going farther with the controls, or if the Wii U tablet becomes the must-have thing and they can think of some good ideas in regard to the controller. But it will be, I mean, one thing right away is going back to those controls, Noah, is going back more to the Zelda we know and love. And that's one of the things that fans are also calling it out for, is it feels like the same old thing. And Skyward Sword changes up that formula by giving you brand new controls. It'll be, we'll get to talk about this farther in regard to the controls. I'll really be interested to hear your thoughts when we talk about this. And for listeners, we are going to do a Skyward Sword spoiler cast once we both have completed the game. And we'll definitely be talking about Skyward Sword a lot more in regard to the controls, because I'll be very interested to see what Noah has to say about it. But to get into more hot topics, we're going to be going into multiplayer mode next in regard to some touchscreen ideas and in regard to GameCube feedback from last week. So that's coming up next. Now it's time for multiplayer mode, in which we discuss some of the listener feedback. Before I start, obviously with Hardcast being a new podcast, I want to let listeners know that we definitely appreciate your feedback. We love to hear it. We were rarely overwhelmed with the positive feedback we got for the first episode. But one thing we'll be doing differently for the most part with feedback is we'll be trying to implement it throughout the episodes. As you could tell with Zeroid's impressions of Mario 3D Land, we fit that in with our own discussion, and we hope to do more of that. And we're probably going to really stay away from the dedicated listener feedback where we just reread, especially your comments that were posted on the Nintendojo website, because those discussions can stay there. Now, if there is one big theme that gets people talking, we will definitely want to talk about that. But just because we don't read your feedback on an episode doesn't mean that we don't appreciate or we don't love hearing it or we're not talking about it. So with that in mind, we're going to get in with first feedback about touchscreens from Adolf Vega from Arlington, Texas. He's talking about a question regarding modern touchscreens and says he just got an Android phone and he calls it the new age touchscreen, and he says, I am not in love with it. His girlfriend's got an iPhone and seems to have the same problem. It's great for big gestures and multi-touch features, but precise buttons and actions are incredibly inaccurate. He gives an example about Minesweeper and how precise you have to be with the touchscreen and how he would never want to play this with the Android or iPhone. He claims maybe he hasn't drank the Kool-Aid, but he thinks that smartphone touchscreens are vastly overrated and wants to know our thoughts and reactions. And I can definitely touch on this topic quickly, and I'm sure, Noah, I know you're a big multi-touch guy. I think you were angry that the 3DS didn't have multi-touch. Is that correct?
Still angry.
He's steaming over there, steaming right now. The iPhone, having it, it's definitely not meant for precise inputs, hence why it doesn't have the stylus or styli like the 3DS. That said, that's why there's game. Minesweeper is not a game for the device. There needs to be games that take in the mind the huge gestures or the multi-touch, and you can still create games that are great on that. And I think the multi-touch is a really nice feature to have. And then I also think that one thing that you don't touch upon, but with a stylus, I guess you have to have it, but you have basically almost like a plastic screen on the 3DS. And it can create some blurriness, and it doesn't give you the sharpest picture. Why, if you're using iPhones and Androids, it has a nice glass interface, and it can really keep that
sharp, sharp display, while also giving you great feedback in regards to your thumbs and everything else. Is there one? Would I prefer? I would prefer the best of both worlds, basically. I disagree with you in regard to I love my new iPhone. I love the touchscreen. But yes, the games are differently. But I think basically both of them have to cater to their strengths to have good games on them. Noah, your thoughts?
Yeah, I have yet to get a true formal smartphone. I have a feature phone is what it's called, which is the intermediary step between a dumb phone, I guess, and a smartphone. But I do know that I'm quite envious of multi-touch, and I can't remember. I think we debated this on Wii U. I don't know. I don't think the tablet has multi-touch.
No, I think it may be similar. I mean, who knows what they have changed, but originally I think it was single touch.
Which I think is just, it's getting into ridiculous land because smartphones are becoming so adopted worldwide and people are getting used to the basic gestures for scrolling and zooming in and out and all the other stuff. And people like being able to multitask that way. It doesn't make sense. I can understand in principle that it doesn't make sense for a DS or a 3DS because that's primarily controlled with a stylus. And what are you going to do? One touch is with the stylus and the other touch is with your thumb. Or are you going to use two styluses and get all praying mantis on it or something? But I still want the functionality. I want parity and functionality because it just allows for more game concepts to appear on 3DS and DS. And I think it would make for a better system. I think all of them need all of Nintendo systems, whether it's the tablet or the handhelds, need multi-touch functionality. The time is now.
Definitely. And I agree about the Wii U. So moving on, Kasaki Project just has a quick question about Mario Kart 7 game night. And if you don't know, Mario Kart 7 for 3DS has community function. Noah and I have already talked about starting a Heartcast community, and that's something we'll be looking to do. The problem right now is we both don't have copies of the game, but I think after Christmas that situation will be remedied, and we'll post that along with show notes as well as probably talk about it right here on this podcast. And then finally, we talked about the GameCube's 10th anniversary in our inaugural episode, and Hayawada commented, he was asking, Nintendo's been in a situation where its system, the GameCube, was very comparable to its competitors. However, Nintendo's system did not gain comparable 3D party support. There's still many multi-platform games that came out for PS2 and Xbox, but not GameCube. Why wouldn't this happen again if Nintendo's next console is very comparable to its competitors? And let's address this. What you're thinking is, yes, graphically comparable, but the input is totally different. I mean, I think the answer is basically really simple. It's once again, the controller input. Nintendo's hinging on the bet that the screen will take off. Developers and consumers alike will like it. And so they'll get comparable games, but they'll get the extra features and people utilize the Wii U and people want to play it on that system.
Yep.
You agree? We're on the same page here, Noah?
Yeah, I agree. I still have to see how the whole hardware disparity is going to play out because the PS4 and the Xbox 3 or 720 or whatever will be discernibly more powerful than Wii U. I don't think the difference will be nearly as egregious as it is currently between PS3, 360, and Wii. But that's still going to play into people's minds when they're making a big investment. Are they going to enjoy the functionality and features the tablet provides, or are they going to be true graphic junkies and potentially artificial intelligence junkies and go for the other systems because they are more capable for that?
Exactly. And then it continues on, what does Nintendo really need to do to win over the third-party support that it needs in order to get core franchises and multi-console games to come to its system? They need to stay on the path they are. With Wii, they really do have a lot of the major franchises on their systems. Now, sometimes there's spinoffs that people aren't big fans of, whether that's Dead Space Extraction, but they do have Call of Duty on the system.
They never got like an Assassin's Creed, but the Wii had pretty good third-party support until recently. There's a lot of different titles. They had exclusives from Ubisoft with Red Steel 2. They had the Capcom Resident Evils, and I get that those were like gun shooters, but definitely Nintendo stepped up a lot more with the Wii, and it'll just be extending its hand out to third-party developers more in the future. And if you've seen with EA having a prominent role with their E3 last year, I think they're definitely moving toward that and working on that. I think it's just having, obviously, comparable systems. But, I don't know if you'll agree or disagree. I think you've really got to rethink what the next systems are going to be. Internet's going to play a bigger role than ever. And what box is under your TV, you need to stop worrying about, and I'm not just saying this from a Nintendo PR person, you need to really stop worrying about what's exactly inside that box in regard to memory and graphic processors. And the reason why is look at something like On Live. You can have a small box and stream very high-powered graphics through that to your TV. There's no reason, and I'm not saying that Nintendo's going to do this, but there's no reason that any of the competitors, whether their box may start off with not the biggest graphics-rich thing, but couldn't get better as the system goes along, or have more virtual space for you to store things in the future. And how that plays with third-party developers, I'm not sure, but I just think you need to wrap your mind around a totally different home console market in the future. Noah, did you have anything to add?
In general, I agree with you. I think those are two different points that you're bringing up. Specifically with the third party, though, the first point that you made that Nintendo had made improvements this generation, I still believe, I agree with you. I think that's true. And they've come out of the gate at the last E3 saying that they're going to continue in that spirit and they're winning over people's support. And the fact that the tablet does a decent job of mimicking the other systems' controllers goes a long way in resolving any of the pressures or worries that the other developers had.
Definitely. Well, with multiplayer mode finished, we're going to come to the conclusion of Nintendo Heartcast. Thank you very much for joining us for our second episode of Nintendo Heartcast. Next time on this podcast, we'll be talking about our favorite games of 2011, and we would love to hear yours. And also, be sure to rate us on iTunes, if you will, please. We would really appreciate it. And when you're sharing us your favorite games, you can do that at the Nintendo Joe website in the comment section or at showmail@nintendojoe.com. I'm Evan, and I want to thank Noah for being with me this episode. Any parting words?
As always, thank you very much, listeners. We love that you subscribe to our show and download it. We really appreciated all the great feedback we got from you. And we definitely look forward to hearing from you about this episode. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
The music used in this podcast comes from Overclocked Remix, a not-for-profit website dedicated to the video game music remixing community. You can check the site out at www.ocremix.org. Here are the specific songs we use in the production of our show. Our introduction uses the remix Tucson Hits the Road, created by remixer DJ Pretzel. The original tracks Boy Meets Girl from Nintendo's SNES game Earthbound. The original composers were Hirokazu Tanaka, Hiroshi Kanuzu, Keiichi Suzuki, and Toshiyuki Ueno. Growing Up Nintendo features the remix Skyward by remixer C418, the original tracks Ballad of the Goddess from Nintendo's Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword. The original composers were Hajime Wakai, Koji Kondo, Mahiro Yokota, Shio Fujii. Player input and other discussion segments feature Zibizian Midnight by remixer Vigilante. The original tracks are Brinstar Red Soil Wetland Area, Raid's Chamber, Opening, and Samus Aran's Appearance Fanfare from Nintendo's Super Metroid. The original composers were Keiji Yamamoto and Minako Hamano. The Master Key discussion features the remix Thunderstruck by remixer Big Giant Circles and violinist someone named Jeff. The original tracks were Above Ground, Lost Woods, and Windmill Hut from Nintendo's Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. The original composer was Koji Kondo. Additional segments include highlights from Beneath the Surface from remixer Vigilante. The original track was Aquatic Ambience from Rare's Donkey Kong Country. The original composers were David Wise, Evelyn Novakovic, and Robin Beanland. Our conclusion uses the remix Pachelbel's Cannon from remixer DJ Pretzel, based on the title theme and ending theme from Nintendo's Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. The original composer was Koji Kondo. If you like these remixes, you can download more at www.ocremix.org and find many of the original game soundtracks for purchase at Amazon.com or iTunes. Additionally, many of the games mentioned are available for purchase on Wii or 3DS's Virtual Console or at retail stores. Once again, thanks for listening to Nintendo Hardcast.